Okay, we thank Mrs. Berkowitz once again for opening up her home to discuss the halachas of the upcoming Yom Tov, and which we will, Be'ezras Hashem, try to do successfully with Siyat Dishmaya, and to understand the halachas at least better than when we came. And the first halacha is, and this Mrs. Berkowitz must know, that any chametz that you get rid of within 30 days of Pesach, even by eating, there are some opinions who hold that you are fulfilling a mitzvah from the Torah of Tashbisu.
Oh, good.
That's I think that's why.
Kidneys.
See, popcorn is only kidneys, but not real chametz. But that's why I see you put out all your extra chametz that you don't want. That's right. So people could eat it and have in mind that you're actually fulfilling this mitzvah. Isn't that wonderful?
There's more where that came from.
Okay. Very good. And her name is not Rover. Because my dog when we were growing up, no, we didn't have a dog growing up, but my neighbor's dog was Rover, Amber. Okay, so I forgot to put this in my list of things to talk about, but certainly you know that you need kosher LePesach food for your pets, whether they be canines, whether they be quiet goldfish, quiet dogs. You need kosher LePesach, and they certainly have lists of what's acceptable. What you can buy for your pets. Another interesting thing, I just got this as an email today from the Aguda of Illinois. Now, why am I on their email list? I have no idea. But they sent out a very interesting thing, and that is when you go through your house Pesach cleaning, you may find shemos. You may find sheets of paper that were from Parsha sheets from 6 years ago that some left over, or you have a little sefer, they sent it in the mail, you never really wanted it, you never even opened it up, or you may have found some leftover tzitzis from your boys, all sorts of things. So they give a nice little one-page list of what to do with these types of shemos. And they give you a simple guide, what thing needs to be buried, what you just have put in a bag and throw it in the trash, what you can just throw in the trash right away. A lot of people don't even know this. What do you do with your husband's old yarmulke?
Put it in a plastic bag and just stash it away. No?
See, that'll tell you a secret. Okay, because Pesach mostly is for chumras. We're always very strict with Pesach. So here's a cooler, this is a leniency. The old yarmulke, just throw in the garbage. That's it. Don't even have to wrap it. As a matter of fact, if you want to wrap something else in it, you could also. Yeah. You know that. So that's why they give a nice list. If you go to look for the Pesach guide from the Agudath Israel of Illinois.
Do you have to bury anything that say to bury, you have to do it before Pesach?
No. Oh. No, it's just seen practically because people are finding things. Right, that's a good point. People are able to find things, so I thought it was a good thing to mention. Okay. Very well. So, this week we'll try to focus on getting the house ready, cleaning for Pesach, and then the checking for chametz, and what we're checking for, and what has to be gotten rid of, and what not, and how one should go about cleaning their house for Pesach. Okay, so if you were a staunch follower of the Chazon Ish, so then you'll know there's an interesting... There's a book that was written about someone who spent 20 years together with the Chazon Ish, the founder of a certain shkuna in Bnei Brak, Rav Halpern, Rav Yaakov Halpern, and his son, Rav Rafal Halpern, very close with the Chazon Ish, and he writes how the Chazon Ish called him before Pesach if he come over with one of his friends to help with Bedikas Chametz. So he and another friend from Yeshiva came over, and the Chazon Ish did not have a very large home. but they spent 3 hours and they turned over every single mattress and every drawer was open. They looked for every single crumb and they didn't find anything. And the Chaznis and Ish told them, don't worry, Bedikas Chametz is not to find Chametz, it's just to look to see if there is Chametz. So, and as for such a small apartment, they spent a lot of time on it. But those of us that not want to find an easy way out, but sort of want to stay sane still when you come to the Pesach Seder, which is also part of the mitzvah of Pesach. So we have to know what we have to do. Okay, because I don't believe everybody here is like Rebbe Kanievsky. No, I mean in this regard. And that she used to wait to cook for Pesach. She didn't start until after Bedikas Chametz. Can you imagine that? No. I mean, after Bedikas Chametz, like this, it's Thursday night this year. So after Bedikas Chametz, so then all the Chametz was out of the house, nothing left over. Then she would start cooking. So basically, she would stay up a whole night, I guess a whole day, and then I don't know how she stayed up for the Seder. So if you're not Robertson Kanievsky and not going to be able to be assured to stay up for the Seder, best learn at least what has to be done. But anything that we're going to be, let's balance it out with, because we mentioned some Litvisha great people. So one of the Ger Rebbes, the Pnei Menachem, for those that have some Hasidish blood in their body, said like this. He said that the effort that goes into cleaning for Pesach creates certain malachim that will stand at our side on Rosh Hashanah. Because there's certain acronyms we use for the Tkiyah Shofar, Tkiyah Shvarim Tshuva Tkiyah, and then Shvarim Tshuva Tkiyah, it's all those different things. So those all are from names of malachim. And they are created, he said, from the cleaning on before Pesach. Okay? I can't prove or disprove that. Take it as you will, but we certainly should go with that in mind, that everything that we're going to be doing for Pesach would be well known that we're being Mekayim Mitzvah. Even getting together before Pesach to learn about the halachas. The Gemara tells us, very famously, Gemara says that 30 days before Pesach, you start getting involved with asking and dealing with the halachas of Pesach. Some say it's only 2 weeks before, but according to some, there's actually a mitzvah from the Torah. It's a biblical mitzvah to start preparing and getting ready and start knowing about Pesach. But again, the effort and most of the cleaning of the house and getting the house ready, not the actual searching for chametz on the night of Bedikas Chametz on Thursday night, but the preparation of the house, most of it falls on the shoulders of the women who are in charge of the house, because you tell the man, okay, you have to clean for this. I don't even know where we keep the chametz. I don't even know where to start. So it's mostly, in most homes, it is the women that take charge of that. So just, it's interesting, we have to know that it's sometimes a strenuous job. And at times, there are people who overdo it. I would say, most times, almost everybody overdoes it. Because once you're cleaning, you know, this old stuff, so you do a little spring cleaning as it is. And you feel good about it, because you cleaned out some old junk that you didn't need there for a long time. Okay, that's the nature of people. However, one thing to keep in mind is that after a day of Pesach cleaning, or an evening of Pesach cleaning, and you're wiped out, you have to just be careful. What's wiping you out? Was it the Pesach cleaning, or was it the junk removal? I remember a story my Rebbe once said, Mashkiach said, that he once was davening in a private minyan with his Rebbe, Rebbe Elia Lapian, who came to England for a little bit. So it was a small minyan, just family members, and one of the, like a 9-year-old grandchild of Rebbe Elia Lapian was davening Shemoneh Esrei, and you know, his father wanted to show him off to his grandfather, so he put him next to him, and he's like shuckling away, shaking back and forth. So after the davening, Rebbe Elia Lapian called over the father and said, tell your son he shouldn't shuckle so much. Why? It's because he's going to finish Menesrei and he's going to be wiped out. He's going to be exhausted. And he's going to think that davening wipes you out. Davening doesn't wipe you out. Shuckling like that wipes you out. So you have to know what's wiping us out. Okay? And you know what? For some people, a good davening also wipes you out. But at least know it's from davening. And it's not from the shaking around uncontrollably. So the same thing over here. If we get wiped out from Pesach cleaning and preparations for Pesach, at least we should know it's because of the mitzvah of cleaning for Pesach and not just tidying up the house. You're probably familiar with the Yerushalmi that the Rush quotes, and it's even brought in Latin, the halacha, that there was a time when they used to even scrape the walls down because they were scared that crumbs became affixed to the walls, and therefore to get rid of all the crumbs, they would scrape the walls of the house down. Okay, for us, that may mean that you have to scrape the chairs and the nooks and crannies of the chairs. Certainly chairs that are going to be at the table, a place where you eat on Pesach, should be cleaned well. Nowadays, I don't know anybody that scrapes the walls. And even in those times, the Rush says the reason why they did it is because Yisrael Kedoshim Hem. Because Jews are holy, and they go out of their way, and they go to the nth degree to try to clean for Pesach. And this is certainly the Yom Tov that we do things that are sometimes seem even irrational. To the point where the Mishabura, the Chofetz Chaim in his Mishabura, has to tell us that if you see someone doing a minu for Pesach, he said, don't laugh at him. Don't laugh at him. Could be it has some basis. Could be that that's what their family does. And let them continue doing that without giving him a hard time.
Does this mean we need to take a toothbrush to our folding chairs so that the crumbs in between the padding and the metal, we get all that out? Or like a toothbrush, a toothpick, something to... Or can we just spray it down and wipe it down and call it done?
Practical. I like that. Okay.
And the answer is?
No. You mean like a metal folding chair?
Yes.
That you can just spray?
One of these things.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how well this would go with the spray of ammonia on it. But yeah, you can do that as well.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, you're talking toothbrush, toothpick,
right.
Crevices.
That's right. That's right. You know, they point out also the rubber gasket around in the refrigerator. Right? When was the last time you cleaned that?
Last Pesach.
There we go. So that's right. It's nice layer of dust and sticky chametz or who knows crumbs. That has to be cleaned because also you're taking food. You could have open pots, open drinks that are going in and out of the refrigerator. Certainly to do that. At the same time, we have to know the Mishabura writes about certain places. He's talking about checking on rooftops. He says if it's too difficult to check for chametz, he says just sell the whole piece off. Just sell that whole area. So he understands that if it's too difficult, it gets too difficult. There's a way out, sell it off. And the Chazon Ish writes the same thing. He says, if a certain area is too difficult to check for chametz, then just you're allowed to sell it. We'll talk about the selling of the chametz. So it really is a balance. You have to know, is it just too difficult because it's too arduous to take a toothbrush and go through every one of your folding chairs, you know? Or is a person lazy? So you have to know, if it's, I don't want to do that this year, so I'll just sell it. Then that's just out of laziness. But something that indeed is too difficult, if it is very strenuous, then you can use that, you can sell it. But you're not going to sell your chairs, you need to use your chairs. Yeah. So you have to, if you find another way, like we'll talk about, that you just spray it with something that will make any taste not really edible.
You just spray it with
you can do that
plastic
too.
And then if there's anything left in there, it's...
Yeah, you can do that too, just spray it down. That's right. Well, you use a Q-tip and...
Yeah. Then I spray it down.
Right, afterwards.
Okay.
I spray from the start and call it a day.
Okay, so that's why you can't call somebody else and say, what do you do by this thing? First of all, there's two reasons you can't do it. For starters, could be someone has already a minig from their bubba and great-grandmother, that this is the way they do it, and that's what they should do. So you can't ask them what they were doing. You want to say, well, I don't have a minig like this, so what could I do? So you can follow something else. And secondly, like we just mentioned over here, for some people they would consider it hard work. For other people, it's just out of laziness. So you can't really compare notes to what someone else does. So that's why that's the rule of thumb. If something's too difficult, so you can use the easy way out. But something otherwise, you have to know what at least is the minimum of what has to be done. And certainly, as we go through cleaning the house for Pesach, for those that haven't started yet, we have to know also that this will make the actual bedikas chametz, the actual search for chametz, will make it much easier. That's what the Chofetz Chaim writes in Mishnah Berurah. Says, because we clean our houses so well before the night of bedikas chametz, really it makes the job much easier. So what are we searching for when we are looking for chametz? And I'll put that in, not only the night of Bedikas chametz, but even when we're cleaning the house for chametz, we're also searching. We're cleaning to make sure that this now becomes a chametz-free area or a chametz-free room. Okay. So what are we looking for that we want to get rid of? So, as we'll speak out, the many things are what we call me'ikar adin, which are the strict letter of the law. Strictly halachically speaking, this is what has to be done, or this is what can be done. And then beyond that, there are stringencies based on certain opinions, based on minorities' opinions, based on customary that people do. So one of these debates are, do you have to search for crumbs? Are we looking for crumbs? Are we looking for every crumb of chametz?
And the answer is, the stringency is to look for every crumb.
Not unless every single crumb together would add up to equal
a kazayis.
Yeah.
Right. So the halach is that we're not looking for crumbs. Why? Because the Gemara tells us crumbs are batal. They're insignificant. They're automatically nullified. Certainly crumbs that have gotten stepped on, or they're under some piece of furniture and not really edible anymore, certainly. But we're not looking for crumbs. But we are looking for edible pieces of chametz. So that's not necessarily a kazayis, the size of a kazayis, the size of an olive. But if it's something that is a piece of something that's edible, and the Pesachim say the size of a Cheerio, mm-hmm. which is not very big, but it's not a crumb. So you can have a piece of pretzel that's the size of a Cheerio, and certainly if a child would pick up in the middle of Pesach, it certainly looks tasty, and they may just eat it. And so that's what we're looking for. Child's not going to pick up crumbs with his fingers and eat that. But a small piece of pretzel that's left over from maybe 3-4 weeks ago, they would. So that's really what we're looking for. Small pieces of food items that may have been left over. Yes, there are people who are stringent about checking for even crumbs. The Chazon Ish was known for that. Even the Vilna Gaon was known for that. They used to check even for crumbs, and that's one of the reasons the Chazon Ish checked all of his svarim. Any books that he would bring, any svarim he would bring that would come in contact with food or bring to the table, he would go page by page and make sure, blow it out, make sure there are no chametz, so he can open it up and just leaf through all of it and make sure any chametz comes out. The easy way is any thing that you bring to the table, just don't use for Pesach. Mm-hmm. Right? Again, do you have to check them? You don't. You don't have to check them. Why? Because at most, you're not going to have a piece of chametz the size of a Cheerio in one of your svarim. Right? Or in a bench or a Zmiris book. But you may have some crumbs. You don't have to check for crumbs.
You don't have to sell them or anything because it would only be something that small.
Correct. You wouldn't even have to sell them. You would just put them away mm-hmm. with the non-Pesach items.
You just mentioned benchers, but you shouldn't have like separate benchers for Pesach. I just feel like benchers get dirty.
Yeah, well, these you're going to put away. The ones you use at the table, you just put them away. We're just saying, do you have to sell them? You don't have to sell them because we're not going to sell the crumbs. You just put them away. So being you put them away, yes, you should have a separate batch. Yeah, that's true. Thank you. However, even though we said crumbs you don't have to worry about, that's in the general house area. Because you're not worried that in the living room you may have missed a crumb somewhere in the corner. That you don't have to worry about. That we say is automatically nullified. And we're not worried someone's going to eat it. However, areas which you put actual food on Pesach, right? Unless you have a separate Pesach home, right? Even those who have a separate Pesach kitchen, right? Still use their regular kitchen for Pesach. So you're still putting food items in the same drawers, the same cabinets that had chametz items, and those cabinets or drawers, indeed, you should check, make sure there's not even a crumb. And there's anywhere that's going to have food, or even utensils that will come in contact with food, you put food into, those indeed should be so chametz free, they shouldn't even have a crumb over there. So we're not looking for crumbs on the floor, and we're not looking for crumbs that are stuck to the bottom of a chair, but in drawers or cabinets where you put food, you should even look for the crumbs over there. Let's go through two lists over here. One list of places that don't have to be cleaned for Pesach and don't have to be searched for chametz before Pesach. Okay? Most people, I think, are under the assumption that when they clean for Pesach, it's the whole house. And when they search for chametz on Leil Bedikas Chametz this year, Thursday night, they have to search the whole house, top to bottom. Right? So that's not really the case. Why? Because the halach is only places that you bring chametz into need to be checked for chametz. So, for example, your closet, which you keep clothing in, unless you had little grandchildren who you couldn't say no when they wanted to bring their bag of Cheerios into your bedroom, and you have to be concerned that they drop some into the coat closet or into some of the shoes, right? I assume most people here have more than one pair of shoes. I mean, one more than one room full of shoes, right? So unless you have to be concerned that some child dropped some chametz, it's not a good habit to eat breakfast in bed for more than one reason. But certainly, unless a person brings food into their bedroom, right? There's no chametz in the sock drawer. There's no chametz in the closet where you hang your clothing. So those places don't have to be cleaned for Pesach. Those places don't have to be searched for chametz, right? When your husband's running around with a flashlight, you know, going through the clothing, you don't have to do that.
So if you don't allow food upstairs at all, assuming your children are now no longer living there so that they don't ignore your rules,
mm-hmm.
Nothing upstairs has to be cleaned for Pesach.
It's basically a place that you don't bring chametz. If this place has no chametz, you don't have to check it for chametz. That's right.
But like when you have little kids and they hide their stuff so that their siblings don't find it.
That's for sure true. Now, okay. One thing you have to,
I don't understand in the sense that two things that happened to me both is something you might still have in your pocket, like you've just gone to a dinner and you brought home the chocolates and you left them in there, and also I had a bag of things for my grandchildren, and one of them was Play-Doh that I obviously all sealed and whatnot. But in other words, there is chametz. No, it's not the breakfast.
In what?
In my big closet.
Oh, in the closet, yeah.
So you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. No, I'm not eating breakfast up there, but those are two items. So how do you not check when these kinds of things could happen?
Okay, so the two things mentioned over there. The difference is that you may want to check the shelves on your closet, that you may have something there that you put there. But in terms of chametz maybe falling down, that concern you wouldn't have in an area that you don't have food brought to that area or that room or your closet that has clothing in it, right? Unless that's where you hide all the treats you hide from the grandchildren, you put them in your closet. Okay, so then you're right. Then that's an area which you do bring chametz into. Yeah, it's a simple rule. Yeah. Now, someone mentioned about pockets. That is true. That's certainly on the list of things that do have to be checked. Okay. Now, many men have a lot more pockets on their clothing than women. Right. But still, women, you have a blouse or shirt or sweater, you have pockets also. That's true. Pockets would have to be checked as well. But we'll see. We're going to make it easier anyway for you. So
pocketbooks for when we go to a sofa. Yeah. You know, those are the kinds of things you have in a bedroom.
Bags and stuff that are in the closet.
Oh, you mean pocketbooks that you take like a bag that you bring to a chasana.
Right.
Ah. Right.
You know, or an everyday bag, and you go different. You switch pocketbooks.
That's true. Very good.
Yeah, but unless you're putting food into the pocketbook,
one never knows. If you go to a dinner, like you go to yeshiva dinner, and they have these little chocolates, and you put them in there.
Just eat them. Don't stop.
What are you
saving it for?
I know. I don't get it, right?
Just eat it.
Okay, that was the first item on the list that
may or may not.
I would have assumed doesn't really need that, but again, it really depends case by case basis. Depends if you really think that you do have, and as mentioned, there are places and parts of the clothing closet that could have a concern of chametz. That would have to be checked. But otherwise, again, normal drawers, now, of your kids, they probably do hide things over there. So you have to check their clothing drawers as well. But otherwise, closets and stuff that really you don't put food into them do not have to be checked for chametz or cleaned for chametz. Another area that doesn't have to be checked is outside. The front yard, the backyard, even though you had a party there and you had a shalosh shudis, you don't have to check them. Why? Because we assume that they have been eaten up, either a rabbit or a squirrel or a grandchild squirmed around over there and ate it up, and there's nothing to be left over there. So that's clear. You don't have to check the outside. You can assume that that's been eaten up. Well, see, that's open chametz. We'll talk about the garbage bales in a moment. Another area that doesn't have to be cleaned for chametz or checked for chametz. And again, this is what they've been doing for years, they should continue to do it. But just be a word of caution. As Reb Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, Zichron Levrach, used to point out, you have to know where to be machmer. Sometimes the chumra is asali de kula. Sometimes a person being extra stringent on something leads to being more lenient in an area where they should not have. For example, if you overdo it and you check even in places that don't have to be checked, so you come exhausted to Pesach, and you say you don't really enjoy the Seder, you don't enjoy the Yom Tov, and that's a mitzvah deraisa of v'samachta b'chagecha. You have to enjoy the Yom Tov, and these extra stringencies may cause someone to be lenient in other areas. So another area that does not need cleaning or checking is behind heavy appliances or furniture.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so depends on your custom. My mother, she shall live and be well, always pulled out the stove. Pulled out the stove. She threw one of us down there to clean up. And sometime a chalamoid, we came out. But if you don't have that custom...
Do you throw your kids back there?
No, we changed the custom on certain things in our house. So behind these areas... The Gemara tells us it's as if they're buried. It's as if a pile of rubble fell on them. They're buried, so you don't have to pull the refrigerator out. You don't have to pull the oven out. A heavy couch. You want to check underneath and in front, but behind it, if you can't really get to it and it doesn't get moved on Pesach, you don't have to check behind those areas. Okay, so that's another area on the list.
Like, can you just say that about the refrigerator? I just want to make sure all people in the room who are related to me heard that.
I pulled out the refrigerator anyway because I need to unplug it. So once I'm already back there...
You unplug it to defrost it and clean it out.
So once it's already moved that.
Once it's open. Okay.
Nice try. Valiant effort.
Can you just turn it off and unplug without unplugging it?
I don't know how to.
There's a dial.
It might be an older
refrigerator. I definitely have a chazak.
Another area which doesn't need cleaning or checking for chametz is any cabinet or shelves or rooms that you're going to sell to the non-Jew, mm-hmm. You don't have to check for chametz. It's like you check for chametz. Yep, I have, this is the tuna fish that doesn't have a kosher for Passover. I'm selling to the chametz. I see it's here. You don't have to acknowledge that you have things that you're selling to the chametz. That's not your area. So we do have to tape it off. You have to make a simon, make a marking that you know this is not your chametz. You sold it to the non-Jew. You can't go here. But you don't have to check those places. So any room that's designated for whether you sell real chametz or not, but any thing that you're going to sell to the non-Jew, you don't have to check that area. Okay. So if let's say you have
the gifts are, and I did eat there before we got married, but then all the wedding gifts got put in there, and so I cannot.
So they're buried anyway.
So it's buried anyway.
Right.
I will.
But you're gonna sell it. So yeah. So then, and that's the case, you won't have to do that. So let's say you have the medicine cabinet in the bathroom, right? So some people, let's say you'll put away all the chametz medicine that you know is chametz, and you don't have to use it, and you're not going to use it. You put it away to the side. So you're gonna tape it up, so you don't have to go during bedikas chametz. You open it up and like, oh, that's chametz. Yes, it is, but we're selling it to the non-Jew. You don't have to. Okay, so that's another area. And then the last on this list, at least, is that any svarim of books that you really don't bring to the table and you still want to use them, you won't have to check those. Even those that would check the books for crumbs, only the ones that had a concern that there would be chametz in it. Okay, so that's the list of places that don't need to be checked.
So that was, the last one was books and stuff that don't come to the table.
Right.
On Pesach or...
Well, no, all year round. They don't come to all year round. You don't have to worry about them on Pesach. So even if you wanted to use one on Pesach...
Do they have to be put in the same place and... What did you say? You have to sell them. I'm sorry. The books that you're not
sell the books. No, but if you are selling them, I may want to buy them. Yeah, don't sell them to the Najee if you can. Yeah.
But let's say there's a book on Shabbos. I'm sorry. On the parsha or something. You want to bring it to.
Yeah, so anything that you did bring during the year to the table, it's best not to bring it to the table on Pesach, or make sure you clean it out well.
But it doesn't say you can't use it; just don't bring it to the table.
Right. Right. Right, or if you do want to, because it's a book that you only have one of it, and you want to, so then just clean it out. Then you're talking about only a few books that you would have to clean.
Okay, but the benchers, if you're using a separate set for benchers, are you just putting away the other benchers, or is that actually being sold?
Just put them away.
Just put them away.
Yeah. Just put them away. You don't have to sell them. Yeah. Now, let's go through a list of places which you do have to clean for Pesach, certainly. And you do have to check them for chametz. And that is, again, any place that chametz can go there, that chametz has been brought there, that's obligated to check that, which is certainly your kitchen, your dining room, all places like that, cabinets that have foods, etc., etc. The playroom, certainly, your... The den, the study, all of these places, you know, people bring chametz to. You should put on the list that any briefcases for children, grandchildren, briefcases, book bags, things like that, or your own, because when you put in your granola bar, just in case lunch wouldn't be good that day, you know, just to be safe, you put it in, and you have chametz items in your book bag. So that has to be checked as well. And and pockets, like mentioned before, pockets certainly is like that. Whether it's a weekday article of clothing or Shabbos, you go to a dinner, like mentioned before, that's certainly pockets of kids. Their pants pockets and jacket pockets, all sorts of pockets, they have to be checked and cleaned out for chametz. But again, we'll explain when you should do that.
Don't you do that every time you wash their clothes? I'm sorry, this is a silly question maybe, but every time you wash the clothes, aren't you checking the pockets?
I don't.
Sometimes I get wet wrappers in the washing machine.
Oh, okay.
And there's some things that I guess you don't wash regularly, like
sweatshirts.
That's
true.
Or coat. That's a good point.
More the coat.
So, yeah, probably
like the last time they wore it in the fall,
yes.
And then
yeah.
The last thing here on this list of a place that maybe you would overlook that needs checking and needs cleaning is the garbage. And there's an inside garbage and an outside garbage. So the inside garbage, okay, most people know that. You know, eventually it's going to turn over the kitchen to Pesach Dig. You can clean out the garbage as well. And you have to think about that and to have the garbage cleaned out as well, the inside garbage. Even though you always put a bag, somehow it always leaks. I don't know how this happens, but this is the phenomenon. You know, I take out the garbage in my house, so I know somehow it always leaks through. Okay, I don't clean the garbage pail; that we wait for Erev Pesach. But that has to be cleaned out. Even they say, "Well, it's garbage. What's the big deal?" Yeah, but it could be garbage, but it could be even edible chametz. And then also, what's important is the outside garbage. Why? Because even though it's outside the house and it's in your bag and your garbage, but that's your property. That's considered your possession, and therefore it's considered containing chametz in your possession. So depending also when your garbage pickup is, it gets a little tricky. Baruch Hashem, here over the last few years, at least they have a dumpster for garbage at the Lower Merion Synagogue that has that, so you can get rid of your actual garbage. Before Pesach, otherwise you can take it to the township garbage.
Just in terms of this year, I'm not sure the township garbage is going to be open that Friday.
Oh, you mean the Erev Pesach? Okay.
It's Good Friday.
Okay.
Good point. Wow.
I'm not sure.
Fine. But we're talking about garbage. Really, the garbage should be gone before that. But if all else fails. If you don't want to put on your gardening clothing and get out with a hose and spray down your garbage cans, whether they're metal, rubber, plastic, whatever they're made out of, because there may actually be chametz over there.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so if you're not going to clean them out, and there may be chametz actually that is a fit for a dog to eat. Mm-hmm. So the simple suggestion that's given is just pour a little ammonia into the garbage can, and therefore any chametz that would be there is now rendered unfit for canines and
raccoons alike,
and raccoons, right, and therefore wouldn't be considered chametz at all. And so if you be stuck with a bag of garbage, so one thing is to get it off your property and just put it in the street. I don't think your neighbors will be take so kindly to that. So what you should do is pour some ammonia into the bag, and therefore any chametz. Talking about this is if it's a day or two before Pesach, you still have chametz food that's being thrown out from your regular garbage. That's what you should do. If you're ready 2-3 days before Pesach, you have no more chametz in the house anyway, so it's not really such a problem. Any real chametz you have just self-contained, you're going to do with beer chametz, you're going to burn it on Friday morning, and everything else is non-chametz. But the outside garbage cans do have to be cleaned to make sure that there's no chametz over there.
How much ammonia do you have to put into the garbage bag?
I'm thinking like
one drop nullify everything, or...
I have to coat all the whole surfaces.
Yeah.
That's a lot of ammonia.
Yeah.
Spray the whole...
Now, what I do is I put it in a bag of water.
Yeah, that's what we do.
What,
what's that? What do you do?
I don't know what I do besides, but I pour...
No, but it's a good suggestion, yeah.
And then I put water in it. And
right.
And
then it doesn't have to be as concentrated.
Oh, you dilute the...
So that the amount is... It spreads... It hits it in more places, so I don't have to worry about whether or not I...
Oh, you meant the garbage can itself?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. You mean kan moizgin kais sheni? You do the ammonia with the water.
Well, actually, I am one of the gardeners who scrubs
them up. So you can do that.
And I'm talking about the garbage bag, because our garbage only gets taken out on Sunday nights.
Right.
So we'll have all week before Pesach starts.
Wow, with real chametz.
Mm.
Yeah.
Real chametz, yeah. So either you can bring it to the shul parking lot.
I don't think the shul's doing this.
Oh, they're also not doing it.
No, they're telling you that you can do it at the township. That's what it says.
That's how I kind of read it also.
Oh. The most recent one, it didn't say anything about a dumpster. All it said is you can bring it to the township
for free.
I see. Okay. Well, there is a dumpster, you should know, on the corner of 13th and 42nd in Borough Park. So,
very useful.
I'll drive it over.
I think
room in your van?
It may be.
Where's the township trash thing?
It's pretty close by.
It's not very far. That is beyond the scope of this year to know where the township. And it's on Woodbine Avenue somewhere. Yeah.
What we do is keep our chametz. That stuff is really chametz. Separate. It's usually a smaller bag.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Somewhere.
No, that's a very good thing.
Right. Put it in a separate bag.
Right.
Put it in a separate bag. That's right. Then it's easy. Then just find
a little trash can.
That's right. You can do it like that. That's right. And if it's your own, if you don't, then just put a little spritz of ammonia into it. That's right.
Bleach
is also probably good.
What about, I have this problem by my house that I have people will be walking past and they think they could just throw their trash in my house.
Oh.
They're not so what do I do if people do that even on Pesach?
Even on Pesach, yeah. Yeah. That's similar to the Shaila. They used to send a newspaper prescription. They used to have like a little bar of something. Yeah. Yeah. No, so that, you're not kind of something against your will.
Okay.
So since you never intended to want it, you can't be forced to own it. Yeah, now the last thing on this list of places that you'd have to check is a place actually that I think for some people there is more chametz in there than even in their kitchen cabinets.
The car.
That's right.
I asked myself if we could sell one of our cars.
Yes. Yes. The car is definitely, and when the Gemara told about Chayrin who's stuck in the nooks and crannies where you have to look for them, they were talking about a car, for sure. Yeah. And then that's...
But you're not.
That's even for yourself.
What about the fact that
you're not going to be in there, what?
I mean, you're not reaching, on Pesach, you're not going to go into the car and reach in between... Your harness dug in to get at the crumbs.
No, you're in between the seats, right? In between the seats over there, you can stick your hand in and pull out a pretzel that's edible enough, and you have a kid in the car, right? Certainly. Now, the sticky lollipops, this is from years of experience of cleaning cars, the sticky lollipops that are stuck to the carpet, right? That you don't have to. No one's taking that. Don't worry about it. No one's eating that. But certainly, car seats and the seats of the car certainly do have to. The glove compartment. You may forget the glove compartment may have a bag of chips in there. So cars are certainly an area that has to be checked. The only thing is, yeah.
About cars. So if I give my kids, say, Bombo, just pick me up for the last week or something. Let's say I clean the car at the beginning of the week. Can I still give him kick me out?
That's a good practical suggestion, right? Just to keep the peace in the car when you go. The only thing is that since if you're Ashkenazic, then the minhag is not to eat kidneys on Pesach. And it's better to use kosher Pesach already. Yeah, yeah. No, because if you would have, you still have to worry about then a kazayis of that or a piece of that, a good piece of that bamba being stuck somewhere in the car.
Okay.
Yeah. Now the only thing is. And this, I think, would make life easier, is that a lot of these places that we just mentioned, you don't have to wait for Leil Bedikas Chametz to check them. So you're jacket pockets and your pocketbooks and all of these bags that you take to the weddings. You know, you should only have one of them. You don't have so many. You won't have such a problem. Okay.
Whose side are you on?
I'm still dealing with the shoes. So it really, over the, all of these things you can check before Pesach, which means when you're going through your cleaning stage, you could also double that as the bedika, also the searching for the chametz. In other words, once that's determined that this article of clothing, this room, this area has been checked, so then that's a place that you don't bring chametz in anymore. So essentially that's a room that chametz doesn't go into. You don't even really need to check it for chametz. If you really wanted to be nice to the person in the house doing the bedikas chametz, right? You just leave one room. Okay, this is the only room that I didn't check over, that had the, right? But most people do the bedikas chametz on generally the whole house. Again, like we said before, places that don't have chametz to begin with don't need a bedikas chametz. So certainly the car. Once the car, you do it during the day when it's light, you can get the vacuum cleaner, etc., and it's all cleaned. You don't then have to go back on the night of bedikas chametz and search the car for chametz. Right? It's done. So too with the briefcases and the pockets and all of these other places, you can do them. And as you're cleaning, the week or two before Pesach, it's just considered cleaned. It's considered the place that no more chametz goes into, and that satisfies the din of checking for chametz over there. As a matter of fact, this brought to Rabbi Aaron Cutler also, when he used to go around Bedikas Chametz, he used to ask his Rebbetzin, he says, was this room checked already? And she would say, yeah, it's cleaned already. He would move on.
Yeah. I don't understand. By that night, isn't the whole house checked and cleaned?
So for that's, again, really, the Mishabura says that for the most part, our houses, because we do so much cleaning beforehand, right, it's the Bedikas Chametz should take much less time. In those days, they lived all in, let's say, one or two rooms. Mm-hmm. So everything was there. So they had to sort of, I don't know if they had this concept of turning over the kitchen. There was no such thing. And they used the same kelim, right, for all year round as on Pesach. And they all kashered them all. So it's all one. It wasn't like a major cleaning for the 2 weeks before and then the bedikas chametz. So the cleaning that we do really satisfies this whole idea of bedikas chametz. And again, I assume the Chazanish also had his house cleaned, but yet he still spent 3 hours on his bedikas chametz. And the Chasam Sofer still got down on his hands and knees into the chicken coop to make sure there was no chametz. So certainly, to check for chametz, we know it has a ruchnius component. You're not only checking for the physical chametz, you're checking for the spiritual chametz. Certainly so. However, again, there has to be a balance. If you know, a person is going to kill themselves, and he's going to start let's start with the attic. Let's start with the attic. Yeah, there's the attic, and then he has the next floor. By the time he gets down to the floor where it has real rooms of chametz, all right, I'm just going to do a quick job, and so that's why you have to put it into perspective to know really what's required and whatnot. Okay, let's just talk about a few other things. The Shulchan Aruch writes that if somebody sells their chametz to a non-Jew, even if they tell the non-Jew, listen, I'll probably buy it back from you after Pesach, the sale is valid. Perfectly acceptable. Perfectly acceptable. However, many Peskim have raised issues and concerns about selling chametz, especially the way we do it today. And the biggest factor, I should say, is those days when they sold chametz to the guy, where'd the chametz go? With the guy. And as the guy carted it off, you brought it to the guy's house. He said, here, you want to buy all of this? You want to buy these 3 boxes of chametz? And maybe in a week or so, I'll come back, I'll probably buy it back. So it's in the guy's house. So there's no concern of your property. There's no concern. You may eat it. Much fewer concerns. It was also done on an individual basis. It wasn't like one big massive sale and the guy is buying thousands of dollars of chametz. And, you know, if he would live 4 lifetimes, he wouldn't be able to eat all of the kosher brand Cheerios. And many different concerns with the sale of chametz that we do. And for that reason, the general custom, the minhag, most people don't sell real chametz. Real chametz they don't sell. Except, and this is where the except comes in, except when it's a financial loss. So this became a sort of a, an accepted custom that all of our whiskey, all the schnapps in the house, that we sell to the chametz, to the guy. We sell that. Why? Because that's already expensive. Even a half a bottle of whiskey is expensive. So you put that away in the cabinet, you lock it up, that's sold but the, to the non-Jew, sold to the guy for the chametz. But if you want to go with the general custom not to sell real chametz, so it's best instead of leaving over a half of a box of cereal or a half a container of cookies, best just to eat it up or burn it with the chametz. If you're talking about you wanted to stock up on something, so you have three packages of and it's to all clothes and to throw it out, you know, throw out $25 worth of ingredients or chametz, so that you can feel comfortable selling it with the chametz to the selling that to the guy. Okay, clear with the selling of the chametz. Yeah, you also have to know, not everything is real chametz. Even this idea not to sell real chametz to the guy is only actual real chametz. Like cookies and cereal, and that's chametz cereal. Only things like that. Anything that's like kidneys, that has corn in it, or any types of seeds, and those things are not real chametz. Those certainly you can sell to the to the guy. Or something, they have an item, it doesn't have a pea on it. Okay. Oh, I remember when I was, my brother and I, we shortly after we got our licenses, so we were doing all the shopping for Pesach that year. So erev Pesach, my mother sent us out to the store to buy kosher for Pesach coffee, and we went from one store to another store, and we the Borough Park, you have a lot of stores that sell kosher, but we could not find. We said, "Can they all say they're kosher parv, but there's none of them say kosher for Pesach." And we thought the P stands for parv. We had no idea that it actually stands for Pesach. Okay, so an item that doesn't have a kosher for Pesach on it doesn't necessarily mean it's chametz, right? Suddenly, if it's an item, why should this be chametz? Maybe it was chametz ingredients, maybe there's an ingredient that was chametz, it was probably butl, it was probably nullified. So those things for sure you could sell, even if you can't eat them on Pesach, but certainly you could sell them to the guy for Pesach, and just put them away in a cabinet and have them sold. Okay. So again, even those who have the custom, we don't sell chametz. It means you don't sell real chametz to the guy. Okay, a bag of flour is not chametz. Right, so even if it's a bag of flour that where they have kosher for Pesach flour, they have different runs, I assume, right? I'm not sure, but that's not chametz, right? Even yeast that they have now is not really chametz. Right, so those things for sure you can sell.
Excuse me. What about things that have vinegar in them?
Even our vinegar is really and is not chametz. It's probably 90% water. And so it's also certainly can be sold if it's not kosher for Pesach. We have this kosher for Pesach vinegar.
Right.
Yeah, right. It's not made from wheat.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So the not ripe. Yeah.
Does it have to be sold or can it just be put away?
Well, anything that has chametz in it should be sold.
Okay.
Unless you know there was butl, so you're not going to start looking through everything. So anything that you know could contain chametz, you sell it. Okay. So really, what is chametz? Chametz, when the Torah says chametz can't be seen in your property and sa'ar can't be seen in your property. What's chametz and what's sa'ar? Chametz is edible food that has gone through the leavening process. And sa'ar, best translation is sourdough, but really means it's not something that's edible, but it's something that can make something else turn into chametz. Okay? That's what sa'ar is. So those two things you can't have in your house. Anything that's not either edible chametz or something that could actually make something else into chametz, which would be classified as sa'ar, is non-chametz, non-sa'ar, you're allowed to have around your house. There's no reason you can't keep it. So that's why a lot of products that we have, cosmetics and shampoos and all things like that, right, are not chametz and they're not sa'ar. So you certainly could have them in your house on Pesach. You don't have to sell them to the guy either. However, we'll go through a list of at least a few things where people do try to be strict about certain products. Okay? So, for example, something that's not a problem is any creams or ointments. It's not a problem at all. It's not a problem, it's not edible. Even if it contains chametz, it's not edible to a dog. It's nifsal me'achilas kelev. It's not a problem. Any creams or ointments. And why would you use it on Pesach? If you have it, why would you use it? Unless you have to use it for medicinal purposes. Not a problem at all. Oh, you're smearing it on your body. It's not a problem at all. Ramesha has a tshuva, Ramesha Feinstein. It's not a problem. You need to use this for medicinal purposes. You can certainly do that. So any creams or ointments, not a problem. It's not chametz at all. You don't have to look in the ingredients.
Perfume?
Perfume we'll talk about.
Do you need to buy new, or you can you use
creams, ointments?
You can use
the same ones. You use the same ones. Now, what about things like mouthwash and toothpaste or lipstick, things like that? So here also, from a strict halachic standpoint, you'd be allowed to use them also. Could use even your non chametz, okay? But I don't want tomatoes being thrown at me. So really, you're allowed to. And if someone, if you see somebody, you go to somebody's house, they're using, you know, what? That's your same lipstick they use all year round? What are you, okay? Are you a guy? No, I sold it to the guy, but he let me use it. No. So, by the way, incidentally, I just reminded myself, sometimes people have an area marked off that this is for the guy, sold to the guy. Mm-hmm. A cabinet, a pantry closet, a room. And then you realize, oyvei, I have something in there. There's a pack and play in there that I need to use on Pesach. You allowed to go in there?
No.
So I'm glad you came to the shiur. The answer is yes. Because if you call up the guy, you can't, it's Pesach. You call him up, he said, listen, if you don't mind, I need to go into your room for a second to get something. Well, he would let you go in, why not? That's all. So you can go, you can open the cabinet to get whatever you need that's non-chametz out of there, you can do that. Okay, so these items, let's say mouthwash, a toothpaste, from the strict halachic sense, you're allowed to use them. Why? They're not food items. They're not chametz. They can't make chametz, so they're not or they're not sourdough. And they're basically nifsal me'achilas kelev. They're not really fit for your pet to eat. Okay, you don't give a scoop of toothpaste or mouthwash to your pet. It just doesn't go. They don't eat it. Right. So really, it's not even chametz. However, over already probably centuries, people are concerned anything that's going to be come in contact with one's mouth. This is the yontif of Pesach, as the Arizal says, Pesach. The mouth talks on Pesach. We do a lot of things with our mouth, both outgoing and incoming. We eat a lot of food and we talk a lot on Pesach. So we're very careful about what we put near our mouth or in our mouth. So for that reason, many people are strict and only to get a kosher for Pesach brand of toothpaste, of mouthwash, of lipstick, for that reason. Again, Meikar Adin, strictly speaking, you can use it. It's not chametz. People are concerned about it, and for good reason. Maybe they'll swallow something. The Shulchan Aruch talks about a case of ink. They used to write with quills and ink. So the ink was cooked up in beer that had been produced with barley. Chametz, total chametz. And the ink had been cooked with that. Can you use that on Pesach? Let's say somebody need to write something on Chol HaMoed that was permissible to write. Dip you, what's the concern? So the Mishmur says, maybe the concern is that as you're thinking what to write, mm-hmm. what do you do with your pen?
Quill in your mouth.
Right, for those that eat in their bed also, they probably put the pen in their mouth, that's right. Also not something recommended. But you put it in your mouth, oh, how could you do that? So it's chametz. The answer is that even if you do put the quill in your mouth and you taste some of the ink, you're not doing it for the intent of eating chametz, and it's already been nifsal me'achilas kelev. It's not considered. The only time we consider that something that's really inedible, if you actually go and eat it, then you turn it back into food. But here, that's not the purpose of putting the quill in your mouth, and that's not the purpose of using mouthwash, toothpaste, or lipstick. So even if it would go down, it's really not a problem. But again, Yisrael Kedei Shemaim, and they try to get something that's kosher for Pesach or new ones, and that's what, and that's really one of the reasons, by the way, that they make these lists. One of the reasons, if you really from a strict halachic sense, what do you need these lists for? What do you need all these books for? Right? It's if it's real chametz, you can't have it. If it's not, all of these ointments, what are you doing for? So the reason, one reason is because people are very strict of what they're going to use, what they're going to put in their mouth. And for that reason, if you can find a substitute that's kosher for Pesach, so you should do that. And nowadays, it's very easy. You don't even have to buy the book. They have everything online. You go, this is a Star K book. You go to Star K, their website. You have everything, everything that's in the book is over there. CRC, they have a website. The OU has a website. Everybody has online what you need to find any particular product. So it's fairly easy, and that's why people try to be strict about it. A similar idea is about soap or shampoo. Okay? Liquid soap that you use for dishes or shampoo, is it a problem? If you look at some of the ingredients of shampoo, some of them have, wheat germ, some of them have beer, okay? You have to be careful. If you see someone getting drunk with coming out of the shower, that's, you know. So... Oh, the alcohol, we're talking about the alcohol. That's always the fun thing to talk about when you talk about chametz and Pesach. So these things also really not a concern. Again, since this is a little bit different because something that you rub onto your body, this is either your skin or your hair, when you're rubbing it in, there is a concept of sicha kishtia, that when you're rubbing it in and smearing something on, could have the same status as drinking something. And even though certainly when it comes to a medicinal purpose, we would not say that, here it's only coming for reasons of pleasure, so some are concerned that also would go into the category of as if you're like, quote-unquote, drinking chametz. So that's why those who are to say best to use shampoos that are on a list that are totally chametz free. If you can do that, it's certainly better. If not, it's permissible. And the last thing here is the alcohol. So this is a very interesting psak, and once it came out from Rav Moshe, that's it. What Rav Moshe says, he was the Pesach Hadar. You could always, as we say, you could always rely on Rav Moshe on anything that he said. L'chumra and l'kula. But this is an interesting chumra that he had. And he was not the only one. Even Pesachim before, the generation before that said the same thing. And that is that if you have an item that has alcohol in it, even though now it's been mixed with other things, but if somehow you can separate the two, you could distill the item and take away the alcohol content in it, and it would be edible alcohol, someone who was addicted to alcohol would drink it. So that, Rav Moshe says, had already the status of chametz, and you can't have it on Pesach. So this would include, now there is another side to the story, there are others that have the basis. For example, it's an interesting halacha, because it comes up, usually in every home it comes up over the years. What's the halacha if the child comes home from preschool, and they made this wonderful picture of the Dalet Kaisais, and they did it by themselves, and it's made out of macaroni. Could you have that on Pesach? Can you leave it around, hang it on your wall for Pesach? You wouldn't, certainly. Right? But what's the basis of why it's okay? Because the Gemara talks about a case of that you had an item of chametz that you made into a chair. You made it into a stool. And you say, okay, this is designated now as a stool. It became hardened. I'm going to use it as a stool. So the Gemara also says that you smeared it with something, so that that means not that you made it more inedible, but rather that you actually did something to it to designate it as a non-eating item anymore. So really the same thing should be with these things made out of macaroni. Certainly if they shellacked it with some sort of paint or something, it's not edible, it's designated as a picture, it really shouldn't be a problem. But
Play-Doh?
Huh?
Is Play-Doh edible?
Play-Doh is edible.
Plato is a similar thing. It is, even though it can be edible, but it's really has been designated as an item to to play with. Yeah, but that's certainly one of the things on the list that we put away. You don't have to sell it, but you put it away with the chametz item. The same thing with the these other items.
The perfume, do you sell though?
Oh, so one second. So the rationale here should be like this: they made perfume, right? It means they took alcohol, which is chametz, but they mixed it with other ingredients that right now it's not edible, right? It's not edible, and they designated it. By the mere fact of mixing it and creating this product and writing on it, there's a new product, that shows it's something else. So that's the basis of the argument that really these things should be able to be used even on Pesach. You don't eat perfume, right? So you really should be able to use it. But Rav Moshe and Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, they've ruled against it, and therefore that's why people should be strict with it. And so these things shouldn't be used. I don't think you even have to sell it. Just put it away. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure. It's a better best you should sell it to. But where this comes up, just to give a list of what's brought in a list, there are colognes and hairspray, some deodorants that would have this issue. And for that's another reason why you would need this list to know which ones are acceptable in terms of these items to use to, or rather not to use them on Pesach. Again, the only concerns are things that are liquid, which they can turn it back into edible alcohol. Anything that's been already a cream or a lotion or an ointment is certainly not a problem. Or a solid, a bar of soap that's solid also is certainly not a problem. Finally, get to one last item here, and that is medications. So, as you'll see in any book on Pesach, and any list, and any shiur that you go to, anyone who takes medication regularly should not stop taking the medication. If they need to take it every day, there's a reason they need to. If they would think that maybe they don't have to take it, and maybe there's a substitute, so they should speak to the doctor, shouldn't wait till the last minute, they should find that out ready. Is there a substitute? Do they have to take it? Could they do with it without it for a week? But certainly you have to get permission from a doctor not to take a medication that one takes regularly.
Vitamins.
Vitamins would be the same thing. If you don't have to take these vitamins, right? I don't think you need a doctor for that, but if you don't have to take the vitamins, so the also she gets vitamins that are kosher l'Pesach. But in terms of, let's say, not regular taking of medication, but someone who gets ill on Pesach. So one has to know that anything that's in the pill or capsule form is not a problem at all. Again, you look on the list, they'll have, this one has, this one's good. Most of them are good anyway. But anything that's in a pill or capsule form is not a food item, number one. Number two, it's not taken as a regular food. You just swallow it down. That's not considered regular achila. And a pill or a capsule is certainly not a problem. The issue becomes where you have a medication, a medicine that is syrup or a liquid, and if it has a bad taste, it's also not a problem. It's not a problem. If a person is ill, he has the flu, but is significantly ill, they could take that also. Problem is, if it has a good taste. So there probably are some medicines that have a good taste, and they will be in a liquid form, so that's like drinking it, so that would be a problem. So for that, if you can get a substitute, you have to get a substitute instead. So that's another reason why you would look at the list of these medications.
Have a question about that.
And there was one last point. If this is the medication you have to take, and it has a good taste to it, and you know it has chametz, right? So the simple thing is, just put a little drop of liquid soap in it. That will make it taste bad. Not ammonia. Ammonia you leave for the garbage.
Yeah,
yeah. So that's what you put a little bit. Yeah, a little liquid soap into it, and then you can take it. Yeah.
So can I ask my question now?
He just did.
No. If you use non-traditional medicines, herbs, they're not going to be listed. But if they're in capsule form or in pill form, there shouldn't be a problem with them?
Right.
question going back to the cleaning. Or do you want to go ahead? I don't want to.
No, that's it.
Okay. We just cover vacuum cleaners, mops, brooms, that kind of
vacuum cleaners. Empty the bag.
Right, like, yeah, you should go through that. Yes, sir, a vacuum cleaner bag? Absolutely.
No, not the bag, what? But like, no, you have to, what might be caught in the rollers underneath, or do you have to, like, how much do you have to get with the vacuum cleaner? Do you have to spray it with ammonia, or is it good enough just to shake it out? I mean,
The broom is actually something, the broom, it obviously depends how thick the bristles are, but you can get real chametz stuck in there. And then you're sweeping on Pesach and it comes out. So that is an area that chametz comes to it. And not necessarily does it get nifsal me'achilas kelev. It doesn't become inedible just because it's in a broom. Even again, even the garbage bag, the vacuum bag, right? If that guy comes, what's the guy who comes to the house to sell the vacuum?
The Oric man,
yeah. So if he would come on pace, you'd open up the thing, you could find a Cheerio in there that's edible.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Stuck in the bristles of the vacuum, the belt over there, I don't think that's a concern.
We just got a separate room for Pesach.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Right.
Who needs to vacuum on Pesach, seriously?
All those matzah.
Well, yeah, the matzah crumbs, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Very good. Okay, so we'll hold it here for this week.